I'm Dr. Connie Lester, the director of the Riches Program, and you are listening to the Riches Documentary Podcast. Welcome to the Riches Documentary Podcast. Riches, the regional initiative for collecting the histories, experiences, and stories of Central Florida, is an umbrella program housing interdisciplinary public history projects that bring together different departments at the University of Central Florida with profit and nonprofit sectors of the community in order to promote the collection and preservation of the region's history. By facilitating research that records and presents the stories of communities, businesses, and institutions in Central Florida, Riches seeks to provide the region with a deeper sense of its heritage. This series will feature a podcast every 2 weeks, in the middle and at the end of each month, that will explore various aspects of Central Florida history. In today's episode, A History of Gay Days, Daniel Webster explores the history of the annual event that has become a Central Florida tradition.
Hello, you are listening to A History of Gay Days. Throughout the Central Florida region, few events have been as successful in generating tourist enthusiasm as the Gay Day celebration at Walt Disney World. Each June, thousands of visitors flock to the Sunshine State to attend this yearly phenomenon, which now boasts a number of theme parties dispersed throughout the span of an entire week. The first celebration occurred at Walt Disney World's Magic Kingdom back in 1991 and was a single-day event. The planning for that first year began as a grassroots effort within the local gay community, and throughout the years, the event itself would take on new life as it grew to be more popular and more successful. Currently, the event is put on by Gay Days Incorporated, whose president is Chris Alexander Manley. Chris's experience with Gay Days goes back to the event's first year, at which time he was actively involved in promoting it throughout the community. I recently spoke with Chris and asked him to elaborate on how it all originated, and I also asked him to briefly explain the story behind the red t-shirts, which have now become an event staple for attendees.
Basically, the Central Florida community, different components, the Gay Community Center, some online chat groups, and some other organizations here, just finally decided, well, let's do a day at Disney. And the Magic Kingdom was chosen that first year on that first Saturday in June and told everybody to wear red to be seen. And that's where the red t-shirts came from. Red's a very bright, attractive color. Just like they say, you shouldn't drive red cars because that might draw the cops' attention to you. Red t-shirts definitely will pull a lot of people's attention, especially when many people are wearing them. So that's where that started.
As Chris had mentioned that Gay Days was planned around the first weekend of June, I wondered if this particular date held special significance.
The weekend we chose was the slowest vacation time here in Central Florida for tourism. So now, because of Gay Days having grown to be one of the largest gay and lesbian vacation events in the world, you know, it's one of the busiest weekends for tourism here in Central Florida. So it's had the opposite effect, taking a very slow week for tourism to one of the busiest, so I'm very proud of that.
Given Gay Day's enormous popularity, I asked Chris whether he had any idea throughout that first year that it would eventually become the monumental event that it is today.
No, it was just, let's all get together, and we promoted it out, and, you know, from there, definitely with the internet coming about, has helped grow it to be such an international event. But yeah, the first year we just didn't have any idea of where it could go.
In addition to speaking with Chris Alexander Manley, I was also given the opportunity to speak with Jack Rutland, Executive Director of the Stonewall Library Museum Archive in Fort Lauderdale. As Jack's professional role centers around the topic of gay history, I felt his insight would be useful in positioning Gay Days within a larger social and cultural context. I began our conversation by asking Jack about the first Gay Day celebration in 1991 and whether he felt this time period in general, the early 90s, possessed any larger social and cultural implications.
I think the time period definitely carries those larger implications. We were coming out of the 80s, which were a very dark decade for gay men in particular because of the AIDS pandemic. And I think the fact that the 90s began with something like the Gay Days event is certainly not a coincidence, and I think it was sort of a wonderful chance for people to kind of exhale a little bit after what we had all been through in the 80s. There was some promise for treatment of the disease, and frankly, a lot of us were just exhausted by it, and to have a chance to go and frolic in the Orlando sun was really wonderful.
I now pondered as to whether Gay Days itself should be viewed as a novel phenomenon or simply an outgrowth of an earlier strand of gay tourism. Jack shared his thoughts on the matter.
I think it's an outgrowth, and I think early on it was simply a matter of getting away. I think sun and sand and boys and beach are hard to resist. I think Fort Lauderdale kind of wrote the book about that. We were advertising in national gay publications as early as 73, 74. And at that point, guest houses began to appear here, catering strictly to a gay clientele. Places like the Marlin Beach, obviously, was an icon of gay travel back then.
Following this elaboration, I sought to grasp the ways in which Gay Days and its origins factored into the larger picture of gay history.
I sort of think of the 90s as when America came out as a society and as a culture. I think mainstreaming of things that we do, the fact that Gay Days is not strictly set aside where only gays are allowed in. There are plenty of other people there as well. I think it's all part of, again, the sort of coming out of America. We were seeing ourselves on TV. We were seeing ourselves in movies. I think the 90s is really when that happened for all of us.
Having gained a better understanding of Gay Days' historic context, I next wanted to find out about the gay community's response to the event and whether some were initially hesitant of being so open in public. I again spoke with Chris Alexander Manley.
It was both, as it is today. There are many gays and lesbians that won't come out for Gay Days, that won't go out to come out with pride, because they don't want to be seen as part of the gay and lesbian community. I think now, compared to 20 years ago, you know, with the first Gay Days, more and more are happy about being seen and being identified as gay, wearing the red t-shirts and things like that. And across the board, that's why the community has grown so strong over the years with, you know, the oldest gay center in Florida. You know, the NBA is a very active group, the chorus, Orlando Gay Chorus. So definitely it's improved over the years on the reactions from our own community.
I was now interested to hear about the ways in which heterosexuals and also the park staff responded to the event.
Overall, the park staff have always been very happy with it. There was the one year that Disney put out signs because of their concern for their non-GLBT or supportive guests, and that caused a little bit of a backlash against them, and they never did that again. But overall, every year, I think the majority of the non-Gay Days attendees, you know, once they're aware of it, they're fine with it. You know, we do get the calls, you know, through the year, like, what weekend are y'all holding your event? You know, and we can tell it's people that, you know, don't want to be here for that reason, which is fine. You know, it could be a college weekend. It could be a minority weekend or something, and other people might not be comfortable being around people that are different from them.
The topic next turned to controversy. Throughout the 1990s, Gay Days was often seen as a controversial event that brought about threats, boycotts, and protests. I asked Chris whether this element of controversy ever became a serious concern for him and how he felt it affected the morale of attendees.
Well, I think it benefited the morale because, you know, when you're faced with people that are saying lies about you, you know, people stand up and fight against that, you know, the marches on Washington and all those. And it's not a joke, I kind of miss those protests that we had back in the 90s because that helped us get national attention, you know, CNN and all that. But I think the reason those protests petered out was because, you know, it is proven to be, it's a major economic boom for the Central Florida community. More money is spent shopping, dining, drinking, visiting the parks. So that's, I think, has helped those groups that in the 90s were kind of saying, well, this is what's going on and this is what's going to happen. Then finally all the facts came out. Well, no, the exact opposite. More people are coming, more money is being spent, so.
Following this, I asked Chris whether the name Gay Days itself had ever been a source of controversy, and whether various members of the GLBT community felt the term carried an implication exclusive to male homosexuals.
Not that I've heard, and about 8 years ago, we created Girls at Gay Days to give the women's community more ownership of event types that they enjoy doing. The full community, most of the time they come together in different events, but then other times the different groups prefer to have their own area.
Chris next expounded on the reasons why he feels Gay Days has become such a popular event.
One good reason is that we're blessed to have all these great parks here in Central Florida, and you know, Orlando and Las Vegas always fight for the number one tourist destination. If you're a park lover or you like to be near the ocean, because definitely many people come in for a full week and they might stay down at Fort Lauderdale for Memorial Day week and then come up for Gay Days or go over to Tampa, St. Pete area. You know, we have so many natural as well as man-made wonders such as the parks. That is what has helped it because our community is no different. There are many that just love the park, so they'll come back year after year. Another part is the internet and the marketing that we do. We travel around the world now promoting Gay Days, and the amount of what the internet provides people for research and everything, that's definitely benefited helping the event get as large as it is.
Upon possessing a greater knowledge of the response to Gay Days, I once again turned to Jack Rutland for context and inquired whether he felt the site of Disney World itself was significant.
I think the site is significant. And I think all of us are of a certain age where we went to Disney World as kids with our families, and to have the chance to go with our friends, our brothers and sisters, and our gay friends, I think it's a perfect venue for what needed to happen at that time.
I also asked Jack whether he felt Gay Days organizers and attendees were trying to communicate some sort of larger message by choosing such an iconic and well-known public space.
You know, I would like to think that somewhere in the back of their minds that was part of it, but I really think it was just a means of providing a venue that would be enjoyable, that people could come and feel comfortable celebrating themselves, not feeling embarrassed if they're holding hands or the like. I think what ended up happening, though, when the event took place, certainly the local community began to see there were lots of gay tourist dollars to be had. And I think the effect of that sort of changed the intent, the original intent. Yes, we were going there to enjoy ourselves, but the local community, local cultural sites, other things in and around Orlando began to see the value in that, and that there was an audience there. There was a gay audience that they needed to pay attention to.
At this point, I was curious to find out from Gay Days president Chris Alexander Manley what kind of message he hopes that Gay Days sends to society at large.
You know, the message we try to put out there is to everybody come in and have a great vacation. Spend lots of money to help our local economy, but to be yourself, have a great time, let other people see who you are. If other people see you, maybe that'll, and I believe it has, it's open minds. You know, it might start that dialogue between a heterosexual family and their kids, and hopefully it'll be a positive one, because those kids, one of them might turn out gay, or, you know, the family might have a gay uncle or a lesbian aunt or whatever.
I now felt it was important to examine the ways in which this annual celebration currently impacts our local community.
I think the local community has grown to accept the event and become part of it. You know, for many years, you know, after it really grew to be as large as it was, many of the locals and many that maybe were involved in the early years, they just didn't want to go out there anymore. They just felt it was just the parks. So we're always adding things that the local community enjoys doing because the price point's very reasonable, if not free. And I think it's an easier access for many of the locals to come out and either spend just one day, or many locals actually purchase a hotel room and stay out there for the whole weekend. You know, definitely this last year, well, we've always held the kickoff party, the Gay Days kickoff party, at one of the local venues. It's been at the Orlando Museum of Art before. It's been at the Science Center a few times. It's been at Orlando City Hall one year. It's been at Saks Fifth Avenue at Florida Mall for a few years. So we moved that around, which pulls in more of the local business community. And plus, now we probably are up to about 20 to 25 local charity or nonprofit organizations that we either donate vendor space to or discount it. We're very into pet charities. So there's usually 10 to 15 pet rescues there. The Central Florida Zoo was out there last year. Hope and Help has been out there, the Gay Community Center, the Orlando Gay Course, the NBA, and many other state and national charities or nonprofits. participate, so to give it that ownership. But something is happening out there that benefits something in your life.
From its early years as a modest gathering of friends within the gay community, Gay Days has transformed itself to become one of the premier vacation destinations for gay tourists from around the globe. Never a stranger to controversy in its early years, recently it has enjoyed a greater level of acceptance throughout the local community. While the broader historical impact of Gay Days has yet to be fully realized, it can be safely stated that this annual celebration has already made a lasting imprint on the Central Florida economy and the local gay community as well. We hope that you have enjoyed this podcast, and we thank you for listening.
Thank you for listening to the Riches Documentary Podcast. Feel free to contact us with any questions or comments on the program that you just heard. Please join us for the next episode, Space, the Cocoa Beach Frontier.